This is GamesAtWork.biz with Phaedra Boinodiris, Michael Martin, and Michael Rowe, your weekly podcast about gaming technology and play. The thoughts and opinions on this podcast are those of the hosts and guests alone, and not the opinions of any organization which we have been, are, or may be affiliated with.
This is episode 111. What does a tweet sound like?
Hello and welcome to another edition of GamesAtWork.biz. This is Michael Martin. I am coming to you today from my in-law's house in Louisville, North Carolina. So I'm very happy to be recording again on this fine spring day in North Carolina and joined, of course, by my co-host, Mr. Michael Rowe.
Hey, good evening, good afternoon, good morning to everybody who's listening. It's Friday.
It's Friday. And you know what? We need a Friday today like nobody's business. It's been one of those kind of weeks. So we have a really cool topic to talk about today. And we hope you are going to be as interested as we are in this topic. And we'd love to get your ideas and feedback as we go along with it. And there's lots of ways to reach us. But let's dive right in because that's what we do. There was an article that came out earlier this week from Wired Magazine on the Apple Watch. And there's all the hype and the buzz around the Apple Watch right now. If you're following along at home and you've set your watch or your alarm to, what is it now, T-minus 7 days for when we will have the opportunity to place a pre-order for said new device. There's lots of news, and that news is attracting a ton of attention. So this Wired article had some perfect timing to it. And the article talks.
Imagine that. They wrote an article that's perfectly timed. An upcoming news event.
Yeah. Can you imagine? Those guys are sharp. You'd think they're in the journalism business.
Maybe so.
And this article talks an awful lot about what it was like in those early heady days of coming up with what the watch could or should be, and what it was like to really dive in deeply to the inner workings of horology and sorting out, you know, the methods and the means to create a meaningful product here. I particularly like, by the way, the spot where they actually strapped onto somebody's wrist an iPhone, because the software was well ahead of the hardware components. So they used an iPhone strapped to somebody's wrist to help show what the watch might be able to do from a software standpoint. And it was mentioned that they used a very high quality Velcro strap, at least.
Did they only use a small portion of the iPhone screen, though?
You know, I don't remember them getting into that amount of detail, but I thought it was kind of funny. I'm holding my 6 Plus up on my wrist right now, and it's feeling like, I don't know, like a, you know, control panel or something, like, you know, something you might have seen on Data. So the thing that got me and really was intriguing to me was this concept of the Taptic Engine. And there was a question that was asked in this article that said, what do you think a tweet should feel like? And how the team that was working on this were looking at all kinds of different alerts and mechanisms and everything from, they said, from lightsabers to cuckoo clock kind of stuff, everything. And the Taptic Engine, which is a means by which vibrations or tapping or movement can be transmitted from the watch through the wrist or the back of the wrist to the skin of the wearer, was and is a method for communicating. And you can communicate via patterns. You can communicate via strength of the vibration. And that question, what does a tweet feel like, to me was just like, it's very intriguing.
Well, I think there's really two answers, right? Because there's only two answers.
Well,
the first one, a tweet is a bird and it's tweeting. So wouldn't it be like a little peck?
I heard some of people thinking that. The one I heard more often was a flutter. you know, like a little Twitter, like a little flutter. And someone actually said to me, you know, kind of like a butterfly kiss, you know, just a little gentle. And it's like, maybe, but I'm not sure. And if I were designing this for me, I'm not sure what I would want, to be honest with you. So
I would want nothing.
Nothing?
Because too many of them. Right. Too many people on it. So it'd be like just constant.
Well, yeah. And if it were like a woodpecker, right? You know, say you were following a hashtag or something and go, that would probably not be cool, right? Or a chicken.
That would be,
you know,
bad.
Chicken in the hen house is picking out corn. don't want that on your wrist.
No. So that would be one answer, right?
Yeah.
So, and I think the other one, and probably don't want to delve too deep on it yet, but would be kind of like the vest in the one article that I sent. But we'll get to that one later.
Yeah, well, because this is extremely intriguing too, and I think we want to follow that thread all the way through. But
exactly.
But if we're starting right now with the idea of the watch and this vibration engine providing an opportunity to communicate, this kind of thing is not new, right? There's a vibration engine in your phone, so that if you have the sound turned off, your phone can alert you that there's a call that's coming in. Sony had the DualShock controller for quite a long time for game events, so that if you were driving a Jeep across rough terrain, the handheld controller could vibrate a bit as you were going over. That was me vibrating, in case you could hear it in my voice, as you're going over rough terrain. This is not exactly new, but what is new is that instead of having a phone in your pocket or the controller in your hands, you're now having this device on your wrist that is communicating in a different way. And I agree with you, Michael, if it's too obtrusive, I mean, you'd shut it off in a heartbeat, right? You know, all the people you follow, if you're going to get alerts that every time one of them put a tweet out there, you would have, you know, a rapid fire, you know, kind of, you know, machine engine here on your wrist. And that's not cool. Mm-hmm. Right. So how would we envision what a tweet might feel like? What would you think, Michael, about, you know, what would you want to be notified about? You know, would you want to say, hey, I'm watching for these 127 people or this particular hashtag, and you want to dynamically switch
on and
off?
Or just a DM.
Or DM.
Or just DMs, right?
Yeah.
Because that would be probably less frequent.
And what about iMessages, right? You know, you would think maybe a DM and an iMessage are roughly equivalent, right? If somebody were to do that. Or a phone call.
Or a phone call.
Could just,
you want to take it?
No, it's I'm at my in-law's house, so phone calls are coming are not for me.
They're not for you. Excellent.
They're not for me. Well, they could be on my on my phone, but that'll vibrate itself off the desk because I have it on mute.
and then you would know what a tweet sounds like when it hits the floor.
Well, I mean, it's an interesting thing, right? And so if you equate for a moment a Twitter direct message, a text message, an iMessage, and a Facebook Messenger message, should they all feel the same, or should there be some variation amongst them?
Definitely variation, because I segregate my users.
So would you want your watch to notify you if you had a message coming through one of those channels, or all those channels, or some of them?
It would probably only be one of them. And it would probably just be iMessage, because that's the one I use to communicate directly with friends.
Right. Yes.
The rest would be, I think, just way too much noise.
Yeah,
even if it was periodic, and maybe turn on a specific, you know, let's say I'm at a conference and there's a specific topic thread I'm interested in, maybe in a hashtag,
right?
But on the whole, I don't need to know all of it immediately. I guess we'll find out though in a couple of weeks, right?
Well, that's the thing. You know, the article continues that the article says the Apple Watch is an iPhone killer. And I read that with interest, and I thought, are you kidding me? Really? Really? Because
are you sure?
You need a phone to have the watch working. And the watch doesn't do a lot on its own. You know, it's an 8 gigabyte device. You can store a fair amount of things on it, whether we're talking about music or you want to store on it your credit card so you can use it for Apple Pay and things like that. So it can act independently in a lot of respects. But, you know, how's it a killer? And as you went through the article and you started thinking about it, it is intended to be much more unobtrusive and a part of your life, so that you're not lifting your phone up and looking at the message. You're looking at the latest website. You're looking at the email. You're looking. There are things that the watch will be able to essentially offload from your phone, and with a glance, you know, the intuitiveness of the software will see that, hey, you know, Michael, you've just sent me a message of one sort through iMessage or an email or a direct message on Twitter, and I could look at my watch. And if I turn my watch away, you know, the gyroscopic motion of my wrist turning to my face and then turning it away is a signal that, hey, I don't need to know anything more about it other than you were reaching out. And if I act on it, if I tap on it or maybe hold it there just a little bit longer, then the message might begin to appear. So extremely intuitive and not requiring voice or touch or any kind of other action on my part as a user. It's that it can be that natural.
Yeah. I don't have a reference point yet, right? I mean, I like the ideas you're describing, but I don't have a reference point until I have one.
Well, and neither do I. I mean, all I can say are the things that I'm reading, and part of this, I guess, is a degree of expectation setting too about what do I think will make this so novel and unique and different, because I've not yet worn any other kind of smart watch, right? I've mm-hmm, worn fitness mm-hmm. bands, and I've worn other stuff like that. So I'm projecting, I suppose, a lot of what I would hope and expect and would like to see out of a device like this. But like you, I think that the ideas and the opportunities and the concepts will just blossom once you begin to experience it, much like we were able to experience it when we first had a phone, and it went from, you know, here's the phone, here's a standard, here's nothing special, here's now a set of apps that you can download to it, here's a full app store ecosystem, et cetera, et cetera. So I think we're kind of just, like you said, one of us has direct experience, so we don't know.
So are we going to get, you know, people have phantom phone syndrome? You know, their leg vibrating because their phone is normally in their pocket and now it's not. Are you going to have phantom wrist syndrome? You go to bed at night, you take the watch off, and suddenly you're like, oh, it's tweeting.
Yeah, well, maybe. I mean, you know, there are people who use their phones for alarms to wake up in the morning. My Jawbone fitness band will vibrate to wake me up at a point in my sleep cycle where I'm coming up from a deep sleep and I'm within a certain parameter set of when I need to wake up anyway. So yeah, I think so. I'll bet that people will.
Yeah. Cause I mean, unless there's massive battery life that we don't know about, you're not going to wear it overnight.
Yeah. Well, I've thought about that too. And I typically do not wear a watch overnight. And I never have, right? I never have. The watch always comes off my wrist. The fitness band thing I've left on my wrist because I do get that benefit of sleep tracking. But my feeling is, and I don't know what your feeling is, Michael, I'm curious to know. I don't envision myself wearing something that big on my wrist on an overnight basis, even if the battery would last.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'd be worried about cracking the screen.
Oh, you're one of those violent sleepers who thrashes about. Does your watch lose its flavor on the bedpost overnight when you whack it? Yeah, so I don't think I would, even if it had that kind of battery life. And if it did, I mean, here's another thought too, right? You'd mm-hmm, still have to take the watch off your wrist to charge it. So when would you do that?
Right.
You know, and would you have a charger at your desk at work? I don't know.
Well, I was actually looking.
on 12 South one?
No, what the cost was going to be for additional charging cables, right?
So how many
charging cables do you have for your phone right now?
I have three.
Yeah.
One in my bag, one at home plugged in, ready to go,
one in the car.
At my desk. No, I don't have one in the car, actually. I probably should.
See, you should.
Well,
you got to have one in the car.
I take it back. There's a hardwired one in the car that because the car was made before Lightning, I got an adapter from the 30-pin to Lightning, but that's mm-hmm, hardwired mm-hmm. into the car. So I don't really count that as a charging cable that I have. That's the car.
Yeah, that's it. But yeah, I mean, that's right. So you're going to have multiple of these sitting around. And by default, right. I guarantee you there's only one in the box.
Oh, I'm sure there is. So where would you keep your charging cables for the watch, Michael?
The same place that I keep all the ones for my phone. So there'd be one in my bag, mm-hmm. One in the house, one in the car. And probably a spare one floating around somewhere just in case, right?
Right, right.
So I think only two to start with, though.
Yeah. I mean, I was imagining I probably only need the one because that's where it would be. But I would probably want to eventually have one in my bag because if I were traveling, I don't think I want to crawl around, you know, under the dresser or night table or whatever and unplug it and take it with me and blah, 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 blah. That
exactly.
Seems like a drag.
Exactly. And so then suddenly you're starting to
accumulate more.
More. Yep.
Interesting. So let's turn to the vest, because this TED Talk vest was something, when you showed it to me, I would say the light bulbs went off for me in a big way.
Well, yeah, this is a really interesting a colleague that I work with sent that to me. And what it was is... What it is not was is, it still is.
What it is was.
What it was is was. was a description of how you assume everybody has five senses, or we start with five senses, and that's it. Right? But if you look in nature, I mean, nature extends the value or extends the capability beyond those senses. So, for example, certain snakes see in infrared. Certain moles have these funky looking things on the end of their nose with like 20 little appendages on it that allows them to sense
vibrations,
right?
Disturbances in the force.
Certain fish, jelly type fish, have different senses. And so if you think about what does the brain actually do, the brain interprets signals. The brain has no sight. It has no smell. It has no sense of touch. But it interprets signals and then puts those into the context of our awareness.
Right.
And so what this researcher has done is extended people's senses. And the initial thing was talking about how for certain blind users, there is a sensor that they can put on that connects to a thing on the back of the tongue. And the back of the tongue will basically, and I'll oversimplify it, let's say it does like Braille. And so you can see... And you pick up those sense of sight through your tongue. And what he's done is he's helped people who have auditory problems, who can't hear. And he's created a vest that captures input from sound. And in the demo, he shows a guy sitting there who's deaf who's wearing the vest and another person saying words. And the deaf person starts writing them on the board, right? Based off of the sensor coming in through the vest. And so about midway towards the end of the talk, he takes off his outer shirt and he's wearing the vest and he goes, and what I've done is I've set the sensor on the vest to track the hashtag for the talk. And during the entire talk, he could tell when people were interested because he was sensing the Twitter stream through his chest.
How cool is that?
Yeah, yeah. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. And his point was that the mind is set up in such a way that it can handle more than just the five sensory inputs and interpret those and put them within the context of relativeness to the person in the brain, right?
That is so cool. Because it this is really what frequently is described as a sixth sense, right?
You know,
it's a way of understanding the environment a bit more, but it's really a combination in this case with the vest, right? It's through touch, right? It's through the skin.
Yeah. 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 I mean, it's,
huh.
It's really bizarre. I highly recommend if you've got time, for people to watch that one, just on how do you extend the senses.
Exactly, because in the way that you've described it, this is not just a tool to allow the deaf to hear, or you know, it's a way that could be extending a understanding of the environment even more, helping the. I mean, we've talked a little bit before in our data visualization discussions about how you can understand sound through color and light and patterns, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and we've seen things like that before where you can better understand complex data. I mean, another version of that was through sound too. You could hear how the data and the patterns are emerging, and by leveraging different ways of understanding those data sets, you can come to a better understanding of what the data represents. This is another way of doing something that's just like that. You could understand a data set by feeling it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah.
How cool is that?
How cool is
you
that?
You want big data? Wear the big data vest. That is really, really intriguing.
Yeah. Yeah. I was pretty much amazed.
Wow. As a tangent that I'll spin off and loop right back in again, I've just started a MOOC this week, and hopefully by me talking about it enough, this will give me the perseverance and the power necessary to complete said MOOC. And a MOOC is a massively online course.
Operational?
No, maybe it's just massively online. Maybe a MOOC is just MOC. No, I thought it was two O's. Anyway, we'll figure that out later. But I've just started a MOOC, and the MOOC that I'm in is one that is done by Professor Will van der Alst, who is a professor at the University of Eindhoven, the Technical University of Eindhoven in the Netherlands. And his course in Coursera is on process mining. And I'll make sure I drop the link. We'll include it in the show notes. So when you hear this, you could join too. It's all free. And it's a 6-week long course. And I've started watching a couple of the introductory videos for it, even last night. And the keen idea here is around data science and data scientists and understanding patterns that emerge from transactional data. So if you think about it, every time you make a phone call, every time your car passes through a toll booth, you know, you're creating transactional data, and you can understand the processes that are being executed by accumulating all that transactional data, passing it through an engine, and having the engine make sense out of it so that it can sense the states of how what the data represents as a model, and then allow for process optimization to take place, because you can now do simulations. You can do all kinds of interesting, neat stuff out of it.
Cool.
So, I'm really excited about this, because one of the aspects of my day job last year, we ran an experiment where we were able to send a data set through Dr. van der Alst's systems and be able to demonstrate successfully that we were able to get the patterns out of it and to highlight the differences between North America and Europe that was executing a common global process, but they're executing the common global process with data in a different way.
Very interesting.
And yeah, that was, sorry about the buzzing there. That was me ignoring a message from my cell phone, and my phone actually did not vibrate off the table because the vibration motor was not set to stun.
Well, very cool. Very cool.
Yeah. So if that's something of interest to the audience, like I said, I'll include the Coursera link here so you can come join me and egg me on and see and ask whether I've actually gone forward.
Sounds,
completed the course.
Sounds like a plan.
So that was my loop back.
And we will have the appropriate link for MOOC in the show notes for those who want to have access to it.
Yes. So I think that gets me pretty close to the things that I had time for today, Michael. What are the things that you want to kind of close out on here?
I think the only other interesting thing is we believe we've had rumors. There's a theory that our friend and sometimes co-host Phaedra is going to be speaking at the East Coast Game Conference next week.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, absolutely. So if you are in the North Carolina zone, this is your opportunity to hear her give her wisdom to the larger crowd.
Yeah, and we'll have a link in the show notes on how you can register for that. It's at the Convention Center in Raleigh, North Carolina. And I think that's it. I think people want to get to have their weekend and provide us with links and feedback and comments and commentary and all that other good stuff that they always do over at gamesatwork.biz.
Tell us what you think a tweet feels like. We want to know.
Excellent.
And with that, I think we'll just say goodbye and
see ya. See ya.
You've been listening to gamesatwork.biz, the podcast about gaming technology and play. We are part of the Blueberry Podcasting Network, and we'd like to thank the band Random Encounters for their song, Big Blue. You can follow us on Twitter at gamesatwork_biz or at our website at gamesatwork.biz.